This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off. You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own 3 of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get 2. Be like me and get 3. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse. Joe Biden keeps saying he's not coming for your guns. Joe Biden's coming for your guns.
I don't want to become confrontational, but we need more Senate Republicans to join the overwhelming majority of Democratic colleagues and close the loopholes required in background check purchases of guns. We need a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And don't tell me it can't be done. We did it before and it worked.
All political power grows from the barrel of a gun. You know who said that? Chairman Mao Zedong, the murderous, monstrous dictator of China, said that back in 1946. And look, you can say a lot of things about Mao. Probably the most evil human being to ever walk the planet. I mean, if we're going on pure body count, maybe the most evil human being to ever walk the planet. His torture specialty was knee-breaking. I will spare you the details on that because it's a family show, but just know it was not a pleasant experience. And Mao didn't even like to do it. He just liked to watch it. He liked to be in the presence of it while people were being tortured. 60, 70 million dead Chinese people, his own people. So we're talking about a bad human being, but we are talking about a human being that very much understood power. He understood the dynamics of power. He took it, and he held it for a long time. My favorite history quote of all time, as long as we're looking back a little bit, is Pompey the Great, Pompey Magnus, the friend and later enemy of Julius Caesar, who said somebody was quoting a law to him because Pompey was doing something against the law, as Pompey was wont to do. And Pompey looked at him funny and said, "Do not quote laws to men with swords." Now, that's a man who understands power. You and I, we lie to ourselves sometimes. I do this all the time, so believe me, I'm not pointing fingers, but we lie to ourselves. We lie to ourselves about the era in which we live. We consider ourselves to be enlightened Americans. We've moved past all that ugly stuff. I mean, sure, there are some barbaric places in the world where it's all about power, but not here. Here, justice is blind. You can probably picture one of those statues with the blindfolded lady and the scales and everything else. Justice is blind here in America. We're not subject to the whims of power. Oh, be serious now. Don't make the fatal mistake of thinking you live in a different era. You don't. You live in an era, well, the same era everybody's always lived in, an era of power, where the powerful people want to keep it, they want more of it, they will do barbaric things to make sure that happens. So why, oh why, should you take this more seriously? Because the people in power right now in the United States of America, not just Joe Biden, we'll talk about him a bit tonight, but not just Joe Biden, but all of them, why do you think it is all of them, universally, want you disarmed? Doesn't that seem odd to you? And I'm not just talking about the politicians, all the Democrats, half the Republicans. I'm talking about the tech oligarchs. Why do they all feel the same way about the Second Amendment? Isn't that weird? Don't you find that odd? Why would a tech guy want you disarmed? Well, you know why. You know what? You may not want to admit it. It may not be something you run and tell your buddies about. No one wants to look like the wingnut conspiracy theorist. But you know why. These people, it's not that they want to hurt you. Some of them sure do, yeah. But what they want is the freedom to hurt you. It's not that they want to line you up against the wall and shoot you in the back of the head. But, I mean, if you don't do as you're told, then they want to be able to line you up against the wall and shoot you in the back of the head. The Founding Fathers understood it. They understood it very well. Why do you think they put the Second Amendment there? Why do you think it read like it read? And let's remember, this is how it reads, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, why? Why were they so emphatic about that? Well, here's another thing that we have to accept, and this can be hard too, because you don't like to, I mean, you don't even like to discuss this kind of thing with your kids, but they understood power. The Founding Fathers understood power very well, and they understood what won the American Revolution. Contrary to what you and I like to think, it's not that Constitution you keep in your pocket. You understand that Constitution in your pocket would have just been some forgotten piece of history that was hung around the necks of the traitors as they were swinging from the gallows once the British put down the rebellion, without weapons, without cannons, without a bayonet going into somebody's chest. That's the reality of it. The reality of it is power. You better not let them have it all. Oh, they can have the power of the law and the system like they do. You know that. You had better not give them the actual power that grows out of the barrel of a gun. Right now, there are 100 million Americans who own 400 million firearms, and we need to get those numbers up, not down. And no, the Second Amendment was not about hunting. You see, people, I'm not anti-Second Amendment. I love to hunt deer. Good for you. It's not about hunting deer. The Second Amendment is not even about you defending yourself from a robber who breaks in your home, although that's a nice side benefit, certainly. The Second Amendment was put down because they were worried about our own government rising up and becoming despotic, because the founders knew in the end, all governments will eventually rise up and become despotic. Ours is not going to be an exception, whether that's today, tomorrow, 50 years from now, 100 years from now. It will absolutely happen. And you had better have the barrel of a gun in your home, in your hands, when it does, or that ends ugly. And I understand talking about these things makes people uncomfortable. It's so much easier, right, to talk about marginal tax rates. I was spending too much. The border, super big issue right now. We need to get illegal immigration under control. It's not comfortable to talk about guns in this way. Because, one, you don't ever want to use them on somebody. At least I would hope not. I don't want to use mine on somebody. Not ever again. I don't want that. And you don't like to think about your country and your countrymen in that way. We have a pride in our nation. At least you do, I'm sure. I do. We have pride in this country. You're proud of who we are, the kind of nation we are, the values we have here. You don't want to ever think it would come to that. I don't like to think about that either. But the history of the world says it will come to that. Now, I hope it's your grandkids, 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 grandkids who have to deal with that and not us, Lord willing. But the history of the world says it's going to come to that. What does Joe Biden say about the Second Amendment? He's very honest about it.
No amendment to the Constitution is absolute. You can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater. We call it freedom of speech. From the very beginning, you couldn't own any weapon you wanted to own. From the very beginning of the Second Amendment existed, certain people weren't allowed to have weapons. So the idea is just bizarre to suggest that some of the things we're recommending are contrary to the Constitution. Gun violence in this country is an epidemic.
No amendment is absolute. Yeah, they are. That's the point of the amendment. That's the point of, hold on, the law. But again, let's go back to what we said in the beginning. Do not quote laws to men with swords. I don't care what the Second Amendment says. Don't think for a second, if that dark day ever comes, and I hope it never does, where there's a knock at your door and they want your guns, don't think for one second that Constitution in your pocket is going to be what protects you and yours, because it will not. Joe Biden has had this anti-gun rhetoric pouring out of his mouth for years. This isn't some recent senile Joe Biden thing. This is the Joe Biden thing. And why do you think that is? I've often said this. There are many parts of the Democratic platform that absolutely disgust me. I make no bones about it. I talk to you about it every single night. But the two that really creep me out is, one, their absurd love of abortion. I understand not being as pro-life as I am. That's fine. You believe what you believe. But they love it. That's creepy. And two, their absolute commitment to getting guns out of the hands of you and I. And this is where you say things, and I've said these things before, of gun laws only hurt the law-abiding. The criminals are still going to get them. But here's what you and I haven't gotten every single time we say that. They know. They know. The criminals are the ones voting Democrat. You're the one they want disarmed. And that can be a bitter pill to swallow, right? Joe Biden, he doesn't hide this. They're not hiding what they believe, what they want. He campaigned on going after the NRA.
Won't stop until we beat the NRA. And it will not stop until we ban killer assault weapons, until we hold gun manufacturers liable.
Hold gun manufacturers liable, which would wipe out the firearms industry in this country and would effectively disarm you without ever passing a law. They know exactly what they're doing. It's written, it's on its website. This is from his website, joebiden.com. Ban the manufacture and sale of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. They consider high capacity 10 rounds, which is virtually every magazine, I should say. Regulate possession of existing assault weapons under the National Firearms Act. Buy back the assault weapons and high capacity magazines already in our community. Reduce stockpiling of weapons. End the online sale of firearms and ammunition. They're not hiding what they want. They're not hiding what they believe. This is who they are. And you can't ever let them have your guns. I've told you this before. We've had this conversation before. You're going to have to, in the future, either you, your kids, I'm guessing it's going to be you, though, you, your kids, their kids, you're going to have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You're going to have to get comfortable breaking rules, because the system, all of it, the system right now, they want your guns. And they don't want your guns because that's what some college sociology professor told them. They want your guns because they want the freedom to hurt you if you don't do what you're told. Don't ever let them have your guns. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com, Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out. You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, that's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
I want to see a national red flag law and legislation to incentivize states to enact their own red flag laws. These laws allow a police or family member to petition a court in their jurisdiction and say, I want you to temporarily remove from the following people any firearm they may possess because they're a danger and a crisis. They're presenting a danger to themselves and to others.
Of course, it makes so much sense. Surely Dana Loesch isn't going to have a problem with this. She is the host of the Dana Show right here on the First. Dana, I don't understand what the big deal is. Family members would never lie about another family member to try to get their guns taken away. Gosh.
That's never, ever happened. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, Hunter Biden's girlfriend, sister-in-law didn't steal his gun and dump it in a trash can outside of a high, you know, across from a high school. Jesse, I'm glad you're talking about this. I feel like someone needs to tell President McUnity that there is a thing called civil commitments. So everything that these people talk about with red flag laws, everybody already has that legal option to do this. I mean, and there are merits for and against civil commitments, but in this particular case, you don't have to destroy due process in order to have someone adjudicated mentally unfit or to have their firearms removed because they're a danger to themselves. That's what the civil commitment process is. And what's more, Jesse, is that unlike red flag laws, and I've looked at all of these different states that have passed all of these different red flag laws because they're trying to do it state by state. Joe Biden wants to do it nationally, which is a national eradication of due process. Due process does not involve mental health due process. Red flag laws do not involve mental health professionals. Red flag laws do not give you the opportunity to face your accuser in court and go and speak to the judge before a penalty is implemented. Unlike civil commitments, where if they actually use the evaluations from licensed professional mental health experts, you get to go and talk to a judge, and then you actually have to have someone who has intimate knowledge of you, whatever you're dealing with, in order to even make this claim. So that's a protection not only for the person who is the subject in this scenario, but also it's a protection for any kind of immunity from a person who is going and making this report or filing for civil commitment if that subject wants to say that it was maliciously done. Red flag laws don't do anything for the individual who is thought to be dangerous to themselves or other individuals. So they can't say that this is about mental health, because if it was, they would incorporate mental health professionals. This is about undermining due process. And in states like Indiana, Jesse, sometimes it can take 3 months before you even get your day in court and have your rights restored if you were falsely accused. It's an absolute bastardization of due process. No one who is conservative, a constitutionalist, or Republican should remotely support anything like this.
Dana, you know what worries me? What worries me is that about 99% of the country knows a tiny, tiny fraction of what you know about the laws. And when I hear things like red flag laws, obviously, once I'm done vomiting in the trash can, I scream about them. But I'm worried that that is appealing to the average American. It's because it sounds so benign, doesn't it? Well, this guy's going nuts. Just have mom call the cops and take away his guns. Do you think that's something that does resonate, that is more popular with Americans than it should be?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You touched on something too. You would think that lawmakers would feel that it's their civic duty to make sure that their constituents are informed about the legal options that they have already available to them, but they don't want to do that, particularly in any event that involves the Second Amendment, because this is about limiting and restricting law-abiding people's rights. It's not about helping people who are in a time of mental turmoil or anguish to the point where they might actually pose a danger to society, because they don't do anything to that person. They remove an object. It's only about the gun. It's not about the person in the red flag instance. And so I do, because not a lot of people, shockingly, are even aware of this process or even how to go about it. I mean, I had a conversation with a pretty serious conservative, somebody who was pretty well known, just a couple of weeks ago about this issue. They were entirely unaware of the legal processes that existed in their particular state of residence where they could go and have this done already if there was someone within their family or a friend that they were concerned about. And I think that this, we've grown apathetic as Americans. I mean, you can only blame politicians so much, but honestly, if you're an American, you have an obligation as a free person to be aware of what your rights are and aren't. You can't outsource it to pundits like me or you. You can't outsource it to bloggers or anybody else. I mean, a lot of people need to take the responsibility of being educated about the laws that they have and the freedoms that they have in the country where they live.
Dana, I wanted to ask you about something we hear all the time when it comes to mass shootings. I mean, if there's a mass shooter of any kind, and this person did have some kind of history, a family member had complained about him, he was on the FBI's radar, everyone knows the headlines you see that leak out days afterwards. I argue with people about this all the time, that what does that mean? Or do you want law enforcement to start showing up at these people's homes, confiscating their weapons, throwing them in custody before they've actually hurt someone? I think people react way too emotionally, understandably, in the wake of a mass shooting and don't think about what it means if you want law enforcement empowered to enforce pre-crime.
Oh, that's a great word, Jesse, pre-crime. That's really what this is, particularly since red flag is usually an ex parte process, meaning that the individual who is the subject of this proceeding isn't even aware or involved in all of the stuff leading up to it. Case in point, this was 2 years ago. There was a gentleman who was mentioned. He was the subject of a red flag order in Maryland, and cops arrived at his home. This was around 5 a.m, still dark outside. You know, the guy hears somebody banging on his door, and he, you know, it's that early. It's still, you know, dark outside. Right when you wake up, you don't really have your wits all about you. And he answers the door. They're there to take his firearms and serve this red flag order. And of course, you know, he has a firearm, because whenever you hear stuff going on at night, I mean, yeah, that's how people respond. He was shot and killed during the service of a red flag order. And when you are accusing someone of a crime so serious to strip them of their natural rights, there needs to be a penalty before you have to have a verdict and due process before there is a penalty that is served. If it is serious enough to strip someone of their natural rights, then it is serious enough not to forego due process. And in all of these instances, there was another, the story of the FedEx murderer in Indiana. This guy was apparently red flagged once already. How did he end up falling through the cracks? When you look at the situation, you know, the sad story of Sandy Hook, this was an individual who absolutely should have been a prohibited possessor, but unfortunately he had an enabling parent and he stole firearms, which was the first felony offense, before he ended up taking those firearms and murdering people. When you look at Virginia Tech, that murderer in one of the worst mass shootings that involved pistols in the nation's history, this was another individual who should have been a prohibited possessor, and he was supposed to be meeting with a psychologist according to a court order. He ended up falling through the cracks. When you look at Sutherland Springs, this was when Air Force records were not transmitted because this guy was a prohibited possessor due to domestic violence. And you know, that Lautenberg Amendment that everyone says doesn't exist. He should have been a prohibited possessor. He shouldn't have been able to go and purchase a firearm. I mean, in some of the books that I've written, whether it's Hands Off My Gun or Flyover Nation, I've looked at so many of these awful tragedies and discussed ways that they could have been prevented. Like Jesse in Charleston, which I know you've talked about, there was no loophole that allowed that murderer in that case to obtain a firearm. In fact, that statement that was written by then FBI Director James Comey is actually still up on the FBI's website, wherein they had to admit to a paperwork error. Unfortunately, they didn't realize that there was some geographical differences in discussing what police department was responsible for arresting that particular murderer. And so that guy was able to go out and legally purchase a firearm due to paperwork error involving government bureaucrats. So you have a bunch of tragedies that have been really, I think, aided in by government and competency, and the people who should be paying the price for that, Jesse, are not law-abiding Americans.
No, that's a fact. And look, let's not forget, Joe Biden brought up the gun show loophole, Dana, and everybody knows you can go to gun shows and get whatever you want. I've got 3 or 4 grenade launchers and a cruise missile from a gun show just last week.
Gosh, I need to go to that gun show, because when I got my little bitty antique Derringer, which was gold-plated, it's super sweet. Texas Ranger used to keep it in his boot, right? That was like his go-to Hail Mary weapon if he was bringing a suspect in and things went sideways. I mean, you couldn't even fire the stupid thing, and I can't even remember the weird caliber that it takes. But I had to sign for it. I had to show my ID, fill out the paperwork there. Then I had to go have it shipped because it was a gun show at a different state, even though it's an inoperable little bitty thing. Probably couldn't even punch a hole through paper. Then I had to go to my FFL when I got back in Texas and then go do my background check and pick it up. So, I mean, where are these loopholes at? I mean, they act like it's a drone delivery. Like you go to, you know, the gun version of Amazon and then a drone appears in the sky and they drop your guns right on your porch. It doesn't work like that.
It does not work like that. And who can forget the great John Wayne movie, Big Jake, where the Derringer played a key role in it. Dana Lash, everybody, watch your show. I love her. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. We'll be back.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? Usually my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, 3 olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink, the guys come in, I'm gonna go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
You know, something we actually don't talk about enough. I mean, we brought it up before on this show. We don't talk about it enough. That Joe Biden's not going to be here 4 years from now. No, I don't hope any harm comes from him. I just don't think he'll be able to physically do the job. And they're going to have to force the guy to retire. And we're going to get stuck with President Kamala Harris, who says things like this.
We should have an assault weapons ban. Assault weapons have been designed to kill a lot of people quickly. They are weapons of war.
Oh, gosh. Joining me now to talk about that and other things is Adam Kraut. He is the Senior Director of Legal Operations for the Firearms Policy Coalition. Adam, how radical is Vice President currently Harris on drugs or on guns?
Well, drugs, she's probably pretty radical on too, but guns, as you heard in that clip, certainly out there. And I believe her colleagues called her one of the most liberal senators out there anyway. So she's certainly not good on guns, and her record and her comments indicate that.
Okay. What's the idea when you're a Democrat and you're pushing gun control out there constantly? Because they're all doing it now, but it doesn't seem to have public support. Or am I missing something? Am I too trapped in a bubble? And are some of these things they talk about, do they have public support?
Well, I think any political figure, regardless of party, that's pushing gun control is not paying attention. There was a poll that came out recently that indicated that support for gun control in the age bracket of, I want to say it was like 18 to 30, somewhere in there, dropped 7 points, which was a staggering number from where it was prior to that. And all around support for it has gone down as well. So they keep beating the same drum, and you see sometimes after a certain event they come at it harder than other times. But I think what they're kind of counting on right now is they have a majority in the House. The Senate is very closely divided, and they have the presidency. And if they're able to force it through the House, get it to the Senate, and get the Senate to do something, they have a president who will absolutely sign things.
Okay. Adam, you mentioned the after certain events. We all know what we're talking about here. Whenever there's a mass shooting of any kind, Democrats go sprinting to the microphone. This really began with Barack Obama. Before the bodies have gone cold, and they're trying to pass gun legislation and take guns. Is that effective? I'm assuming it is, because they all do it now. It's gross, but they all do it.
You know, I don't know if it is effective, because if you look at the success rate of that strategy, I'm not really aware of very many instances, at least at the federal level, where they've been able to accomplish getting things passed. So, you know, maybe at the state level, in some states, certainly your more liberal states like California and Washington and Oregon, they're certainly beating that drum a lot harder and moving things, as, you know, same on the East Coast with New York and New Jersey. But the vast majority of states don't have the appetite for it. And at the federal level, the appetite just hasn't been there, fortunately.
Yeah, very, very fortunately. Adam, assault weapons, what do they define them as now, and what are they trying to define them as?
Well, that's a good question. So, I mean, for that, there'd be two places you could look. One, you could look at the definition that was in the 1994 assault weapons ban, and then you could look at the definitions that are being utilized in any of the states that are currently having them. As a matter of general course, it's a semi-automatic firearm that takes a center fire cartridge that utilizes a detachable magazine and has one of, you know, X number of features. And those features usually include pistol grip, they include a flash hider, you know, even grenade launcher attachments, things of that nature. And at the end of the day, what you're talking about is a semi-automatic centerfire firearm, and these so-called evil features that make them, according to the people who want to ban them, more lethal. But in reality, it's what actually makes them excellent firearms for self-defense. And it's exactly the kind of firearm that is protected by the Second Amendment. It's used by millions of Americans for lawful purposes, and that's exactly what the Supreme Court has said is perfectly okay.
Isn't lethal the idea? When they talk about this thing makes it lethal, this makes it more lethal, am I the only person that watches the TV and nods his head like, yeah, that's the idea. I want my guns to be lethal.
Well, one would think, right? Firearms are inherently lethal things, and I don't think any of those features necessarily make them any more lethal than a semi-automatic firearm that doesn't have them. But what it does allow for is the user of many different statures, different sexes, to be able to use the firearm in a manner that they can safely use it to defend themselves and their loved ones.
Adam Kraut, everybody. Adam, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Sometimes we lose the plot on this on the right, and I want to make sure we address this right now, because we lose the messaging battle sometimes. Democrats will say things like, well, that makes things more lethal. And because you're on the right, we're on the right, we don't know how to properly address that. So we'll say things like, well, no, it doesn't. It makes them safer. Or no, that's not necessarily... You know you don't have to do that, right? You know you can own the left if you simply say, yeah, it does make them more lethal. My guns are designed to be lethal. Every weapon I own is designed to be lethal to something. Yeah, I have some weapons for bird hunting. I have some weapons for deer hunting. I have weapons for other purposes, but they're all, every single one of them, made to kill something. I have a pellet gun. It's made to kill things too. Weapons are supposed to be lethal, and you know what? There's nothing wrong. You can challenge them on their very basic premise. There's nothing wrong with wanting something to be lethal. You as a human being, you're supposed to have the capacity to defend yourself against harm. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'll say something that I've been saying for a long time now. Why do they want to take that away from us so badly? And they'll always try, look, they try to massage this thing 1,000 different ways of, well, it's that not everybody should be able to buy a gun. Not everybody can buy a gun. They're already doing background checks on it. Well, why do you need a brace for it? So it's more lethal and so it's more accurate. We have lost the messaging war on firearms a lot. By the grace of God, the Americans are still going out buying guns up like no tomorrow because it's ingrained in your DNA. But we have lost the messaging war on this because once again, we allowed the Democrats to move the Overton window so much that you and I, we find ourselves trying to define what is lethal and why it's not lethal and why this actually makes it safer and whatnot. You don't have to do that anymore. The next time they tell you it's more lethal, you say, yeah, it does. That 30-round magazine means you can take down multiple people at a time. Yeah, I know. What if multiple people at a time are trying to kill me? I know. That's the idea. You don't have to shrink away from that. They're dying to intimidate you, to make you shrink away from that. You don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to do that anymore. All right. We have a lot more show for you tonight. Hang on. Well, I found an interesting article. I don't know about the author or anything like that, but the article says Arkansas Senate overrides governor's veto of Second Amendment sanctuary bill. I guess we'll talk to BearingArms.com. Their very own Cam Edwards at this point. Cam, who wrote this? Who wrote this thing?
I'm pretty sure it was me, actually, Jesse. I write a lot these days, but I think this was one of mine.
Okay, Cam, before we get to this idiot governor, tell me what a Second Amendment sanctuary bill actually does, because I've seen these things pop up now and then. What does it do?
Well, so there are a couple of variations. I mean, there is no one Second Amendment sanctuary language, but generally speaking, what these bills do is say, we're not going to cooperate with any new federal gun control laws. So you can pass them. But we as a state or we as a county or city or whatever are not going to lift a finger and we're not going to spend a penny to actually enforce your new gun control laws.
Okay, what does that mean on the ground, Cam? Does that mean we have local police, local sheriffs who simply won't arrest anybody? Does that mean they're going to stop the feds from arresting somebody? Well, what does it mean?
Well, again, it kind of depends on what bill you're talking about. The bill specifically in Arkansas that was overridden by the Senate actually would have criminalized local law enforcement from helping enforce any federal gun control laws. It would have been a misdemeanor fine of up to $500 for any law enforcement officer that said, yep, I'll help enforce Joe Biden's gun ban. That is, I would say, on one end of the spectrum of these Second Amendment sanctuary bills. A lot of them look more like what we see with like California and their sanctuary state legislation dealing with illegal immigration, right? So you can't cooperate with federal law enforcement. You can't assist them in their job, but you're not going to stand in the way. You're not going to try to impede them from enforcing federal law.
Okay, Cam, what's wrong with Arkansas as governor? This is Arkansas. I figured this guy would at least be squared away on guns.
Yeah, you know, and Asa Hutchinson, I mean, he's had a couple of controversial vetoes already this session. His problem with this bill was that he felt it was too broad. The bill as it was originally written would have declared basically every federal gun control law null and void in the state of Arkansas. It would not have recognized the National Firearms Act of 1934, would not have recognized the Gun Control Act of 1968. And from a legal perspective, that's a dicey proposition. I mean, ideologically speaking, I love it. But if you want something that is going to be upheld in court, that language probably needed to be changed. And the good news is, since the governor has vetoed this bill, not only did the Senate vote to override that, but the legislature actually did a complete redo in the remaining hours of the legislative session. They said, all right, you don't like the language that was in the bill? Well, we'll take that language out. So now, instead of criminalizing police who were to cooperate with the enforcement of federal gun control laws, the criminal penalty has been removed, but officers can be decertified. So you could lose your job, but you won't necessarily be charged with a crime if you were to assist the federal officials in enforcing gun laws. They also added a provision, though, that charges that does allow for criminal charges against elected officials who direct law enforcement to enforce any new federal gun control laws. And the bill also now would apply to any new gun control laws at the federal level going forward, as opposed to all of the existing laws that are already on the books. So I suspect that the changes that the legislature have made, probably enough to get Governor Hutchinson to go along with this bill now.
Cam, is this something other red states are doing? What other states have a bill like this in the works or have already passed a bill like this?
Yeah, quite a few of them, actually. About a dozen states have Second Amendment sanctuary language at the state level. Governor Greg Abbott made this one of his legislative priorities at the start of the legislative session. Oklahoma has a bill that has gone to Governor Kevin Stitt's desk. And you've also seen similar provisions in Wyoming, Montana, and a few other states. I mean, it's actually, I think, becoming a really popular way of expressing opposition to the anti-gun agenda from the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress.
Cam, do you get the vibe that Biden actually thinks, that Biden and Democrats actually think they can get a gun control bill through the House and Senate? I know about the executive orders, and I know he's an idiot and all that, but they are in control. Are they in that much control?
Not at the moment. I mean, you know, in order to get a gun control bill through Congress is going to take 60 votes, right? And right now, I don't even think they have 50 for the two bills that have passed the House, the universal background check bill, and then the bill that would allow the FBI to basically extend a waiting period indefinitely for gun purchases while they check and make sure that you're on the up and up. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia said that he's opposed to these bills as they're currently written. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut has said, well, he's engaged in outreach efforts to Republicans. He's trying to work on some of the behind the scenes, maybe a narrower version of a background check bill. But honestly, I don't think that the appetite is there among the American people, even if it is a top priority for gun control activists and a lot of Democrats in Congress. And I think the closer we get to the midterms, the less palatable gun control is going to be for a lot of these Democrat politicians, because I don't really think they want to run on trying to strip people of the right to keep and bear arms at a time when we've got record numbers of Americans who are buying a gun for the very first time.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. Well, let's not forget, Cam, hold on, buckle up for this, and we have Joe Biden talking about the new leader of the AFT.
Today, I'm proud to nominate David Chipman to serve as the director of the AFT. David knows the AFT well. He served there for 25 years. And Vice President Harris and I believe he's the right person at this moment for this important agency.
The AFT, yeah. Cam. All right, first of all, David Chipman, tell people who this guy is for who don't know.
Sure. By the way, so such an important agency that Biden couldn't even get the acronym right. We're not talking about the American Federation of Teachers. This is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And yes, David Chipman, as Biden mentioned, did spend 25 years at the ATF. What Biden didn't say is that when Chipman left the ATF, he then went to work for Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which was Michael Bloomberg's first gun control group. And then after that, he went to work for Giffords, which is the gun control group started by Gabrielle Giffords and her husband, Mark Kelly, who's now the junior senator from Arizona. So this is a gun control activist, Jesse. This would be like appointing Wayne Donald Trump had appointed Wayne LaPierre to run the ATF or the AFT. Imagine what the media reaction would have been. But this is very similar. I mean, here you have a guy who is a committed gun control activist that Biden wants to put in charge of the agency that oversees our nation's gun laws and our firearms industry.
Okay, well, how much damage can he do there as director of the ATF? Obviously, like you already pointed out, they're not going to get a good gun law through, or what they would consider a good gun law through. So is David Chipman going to send a team of ATF agents to knock on my door and try to take my ammo, or what?
You know, you maybe. Everybody else, I don't think they should be quite as worried. But, you know, look, what the ATF can do, and they can do some real damage here. You know, the couple of the executive actions that Biden has asked the ATF to undertake, one would potentially criminalize the manufacturer, you making a gun at home, which is something that, you know, is a right that pre-exists our nation. The administration also wants the ATF to take a look at pistol stabilizing braces, which a lot of folks might not know what those are, but these are braces that you can put on a pistol. They attach to your forearm. They help you keep your arm stable. They're very popular with AR-style pistols. Biden basically wants any gun that has a stabilizing brace on it to be turned into a short-barreled rifle under federal law, which would require registration under the National Firearms Act. It would require every existing gun owner to pay at least a $200 tax stamp to the federal government to keep their guns that they already own. And if they didn't do those things, then they could be looking at 10 years in prison and hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. So these are the first two steps that Biden has asked David Chipman to take. But we know that there are more efforts underway. Chipman himself has talked about trying to reclassify AR-15s as machine guns under the National Firearms Act and turning 20 million legally owned firearms into prohibited items overnight. So, yeah, gun owners should be worried about this. I mean, this, you know, elections have consequences, and putting a gun control activist in charge of the ATF is unfortunately one of the consequences we've seen from this election.
Cam, just real briefly, can he do it? This sounds like it's going to get absolutely slapped down by a judge in about 5.5 seconds, or am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. That's my hope, you know, but is it my expectation? Not really. You know, I think that this would be way beyond the authority of the president to act in executive manners. And yeah, we have seen Second Amendment organizations say that they're ready to sue over any action that gets put, you know, onto the federal statutes. But again, you've got to make sure that there's a judge out there who's willing to agree. We certainly saw no shortage of judges who are willing to step in and block President Trump's executive actions. Hopefully we can see the same with President Biden's gun control executive actions.
Yeah, Lord willing. Cam Edwards, BearingArms.com. Thank you, my friend.
Always good talking with you, Jesse. Thank you, sir.
Scary stuff. All right, we're not done yet. You know why they want your guns. You don't have to tell friends and family members if you don't want to look like a nut job, but you know deep down why they want your guns. They don't want to disarm the criminals, and they don't care about the most recent mass shooting, whatever that is. That's why they sprint to the cameras while the bodies are still warm and try to gun grab. They don't actually care about anything. The communist doesn't care about anything. The communist just wants the guns out of your hands because the communist knows, as one of the OG communists, Mao, always said, political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. Don't ever give yours up. And I'll tell you something else as we sign off here tonight. Guns make people who've never been around them uncomfortable. That's perfectly understandable. I've had people in my life like that. They lay it down and they think it's going to go off or something. That's fine. If that's where you are in life, that's totally fine. Do me a favor, though. Tonight, look up something. Look up a local gun shop where you can go down and take a safety class. I didn't tell you to go become a Navy SEAL, did I? Go take a safety class. Start handling one. Becoming comfortable with one. From that safety class, buy yourself one. Train with it. Start slow. Believe me, you're going to end up having fun, and in the end, you'll sleep a little better at night. I sure do. All right, we'll do it again sometime.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.